This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN? Oh, what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found — I am not a therapist — I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it, and sometimes it makes you realize, like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 399, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. I see tons of people looking lost and lethal, and I think we're all the same. So I scale the steeple and I take a leap, but I just can't keep the stain from my soul. It burns so cold. Hey, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 399. Can you believe it? My name is Paul Montgomery. Joining me on this episode, Mr. Connor Kilpatrick.
Good morning.
And while Josh is on a beach buried up to his chin, we have a special guest in Mr. Mike Romo.
Good morning, team. How are we?
Josh has to be bury himself, otherwise he just bursts into flames when you put him in front of under the sun. It's the result of his Irish pallor.
That alabaster skin.
He just reflects it and burns other people yeah. around him.
What's that bright problem. Light walking down the beach?
It burns.
At ifanboy.com, we like comics, so we read comics, and every week we read a bunch of comics, and then one of us picks the best book and writes about it on the website, and we talk about it on this year's podcast, along with various other topics of interest. Now, before we get to the show, a quick reminder / warning. This is a review show, and we will be talking about the things that happened in this week's books. So if you're worried about spoilers, go away. We never wanted you here in the first place. No, leave, come back, we're sorry. I changed my mind. This week, Connor Kilpatrick had the pick, and I think it just had to be. It had to be this one.
The thing is, last week, Josh had one of those weeks where, you know, everything was kind of pretty good, but there wasn't any, like, heavy hitters. This week, they dumped all the heavy hitters.
He also read Trillium wrong. And
yeah. I think he was already out the door, vacation-wise. But we had Thor, we had Batman, we had Saga, we had Astro City, we had Avengers Arena, which is a great book. We had a ton of great books that were dumped on us this week. But really, there was no chance for any other book to be picked. Once I read Thor, God of Thunder number 11, the final issue of the God Bomb story, which has been running through the first 11 issues of the series. So you really had 11 issue story that was wrapped up in this issue. And this was one of the better endings of a major story I've read in a long, long, long time.
Really, really elegant. For me, this is the most expensive pick of the week I've ever had. When Connor's on the list, I had actually started reading this with number one back in the day, and then I went through my sort of anti-Marvel screed, and I hadn't picked it up. And then when I realized, oh, right, Jason Aaron on Thor, that's the one book I wanted to read. So I picked them all up this week, and so I read it in sort of a trade fashion. And I couldn't believe how elegantly this thing was constructed, reading it all in one or two sittings. Just a really fantastic, beautifully epic, and such a fun comic book.
Yeah.
It was brilliant.
And
brilliant.
If you're reading it month to month, it really escalates in it and it mounts. And especially lately in this God Bomb section, where you have the three Thors together, where you have young Thor and Thor of the Avengers and old King Thor, one of the greatest modern characters ever introduced into the Pantheon. And they get on that boat and they've got their ale and two of them have hammers. One's got his axe and they're ready to go. And it's just, they keep getting closer and closer. And then there's those cosmic sharks and stuff. And just getting closer and closer to this final confrontation with Gore. And what I love about this is that it's sort of the inevitable conclusion that Gore has become a god himself.
He's become what he hates.
Become what he hates, this radical agnostic. And he's become a god himself and destroyed the people that he cared about and this new surrogate family that he's had and turned his sort of false son, we find out, against him, because it's just really just a construct of his needs and wants to have a family again because he lost his family so long ago. And he just has lost everything. And I love how unceremonial it is. It's just Thor just chops his head off, and it's because it's just a foregone conclusion. Like, the real defeat is in what Gore has become and what he's realized about himself. Yeah. And so, I mean, there's a big...
He's lost at that moment. Once he realizes that he's made himself into a god, then it's, you know, he's done.
And it's just done in a panel. And it's just complete... There's no ceremony to it. You just bang, you're done. And it's just a... You know, even though there's a huge, like, Dragon Ball Z kind of moment where Thor, like, absorbs the bomb and he's, you know, he's feeding on the... I loved, like, it's so huge. He's feeding on the prayers of gods
in this book. All the gods and all the time and all the universe all start praying to Thor, so he becomes the god of gods. And it was hard to praise this issue in my review and not really praise the entire story because it's all wrapped up so perfectly, but... Yeah. In case you haven't heard us talk about this book to death, and this is I believe the first book that has garnered Pick of the Week honors from all four of us.
Right.
Wow.
Ron picked the first issue, and then me and Paul and Josh have all picked it since then. And the story is basically this character named Gore, who's a god butcher, decides that gods are the worst thing in the universe, and he must be wiped out, so he's been going around killing them throughout time, and constructs a god bomb to blow up all throughout the history of the universe and killing all the gods that have ever existed, and obviously the Thors team have to stop him. But
there's a real aspect of the weapon that he gets, right? This really reminded me of Elric, and it's not just because I wrote that damn article. It's like having that demon sword and becoming a tool of this other god, right? I mean, it's reading it all at once, and you get to see how it weaves in and out and destroys his psyche from the inside, and really makes him malevolent and just a very... You empathize with him too. He just completely runs off the rails, and I love the whole idea of the bomb maker guy, when he finally realizes what he was, I'm the god of bombs. Like the way reading this in layers, Paul, you hit the nail on the head. It really built up like almost like a symphony, where each layer of complexity and characterization, it really built to a fantastic 11th issue. And I got to say, this is by far my most favorite Thor ever, all three of them together. This is one of the most elegantly wrought time travel kind of stories that I've ever read. Yeah. And nothing is more challenging but more fun than when a character gets to hang out with a younger or older version of oneself, of himself. And Aaron just handled it so well that it was a delight. I mean, you want these guys to have their own ongoing series.
Yeah.
And I love the way this closed. The narration in this, it could have been really hackneyed, but it's always been very elegant. It's always narrated the story in a really nice, classy way that made the story feel epic, but without being cheesy.
He has the tone. The tone is perfect.
The tone is perfect. And I can't wait to read all the different editorial pages and the letter stuff, because, you know, he had never written this character before. That's one of the notes he made in the first issue. And he just completely defined sort of the new modern Thor. He is as much fun as the Thor in the movies. It was a whole hell of a lot of fun. So there's a lot of things that really came together. This made me so happy. And the art, of course, this guy's out of control. And it was really nice to get that Butch Geist interlude. So this has been sort of a tour de force for me the entire week. And I can only imagine how satisfying it must be for everybody who read it month to month.
Well, let's talk about what is the proper pronunciation, Paul?
We saw a thing somewhere as Isad Rebeats. Like there's like a T sound at the end, but
that sounds like a Muppet name.
Isad Rebic.
Croatians.
Yeah.
Wow.
But, he's really elevated himself into sort of the upper pantheon of artists with this storyline. He was always really good, and we talked about him a while ago on the Ultimates book, when very famously Josh panned his art and Rick Remender got mad at him on Twitter. But he really is one of the more amazing artists working today. And this story, as great as it was, I don't think, you know, would have been as great. And this is, you know, speaking as comics in general need the art as much as the story, without this art, which was so beautifully done and had the tone in the look of it as much as the tone in the story of it. The tone, you know, I was thinking about it as I was writing the review, and he's sort of the opposite of Jay Lee, but while also being the sort of spiritual brother of Jay Lee. And they're both very delicate artists, but whereas Jay Lee's characters seem to feel like they're made out of smoke, and then you could sort of brush your hands through them, this art is, while being delicate, has a lot of weight to it, and you can sort of feel the hits, and you can see the cracks in Mjolnir, and it all feels like it's very vital, and also just gorgeously dynamic and just wonderful to look at.
He's one of my favorite modern artists, and I think he's a perfect combination of Frank Frazetta and N.C. Wyeth. If you're familiar with like the Golden Age of illustration, he did a lot of if you look up like Treasure Island, he did an illustrated version of that, and he's done, you know, like Ivanhoe covers and Robin Hood and stuff like that. And it has that grandeur of like an Alex Ross cover, but it's so dynamic and it does move. And I think, you know, Connor, you keep celebrating the process that you see on the page. Where you see the raw pencils and you see some of that cross hatching in the black, and there's a lot of sections because of that weapon, that sort of like symbiote kind of thing, that it you see a lot of those raw pencils in there, and that makes it feel alive. It's sort of like film grain in a great movie, you know, where it feels like a living thing. And this is a classic Thor story that's going to stand the test of time. And I put this up there with the work that Walt Simonson did on Thor. And it's like those guys, Walt Simonson and then Jason Aaron and Isad Rebic, just the best Thor storytellers ever.
I think you also have to give it up for the coloring too.
Yes.
There's a majesty and the blues in this. I've been reading this digitally, just leap off the page, and it's wonderful because you have the groundedness of the pencil strokes, but then this vibrant color. So very much to your point, Paul, this comic lifts off the page. It's a very engaging experience visually. It looks unlike any other book. And it's just beautiful to behold. And there's a really great silhouette where Thor is holding the two hammers.
Right.
And there's almost a Sienkiewicz feel to that next two-page spread when he does the double hammer stuff. So he's defining a new thing, but then he brings in these great elements throughout the book that really make this such a dynamic reading experience. And even the lettering.
Yeah, everything about this is great.
It's a tour de force, really.
It's hard not to talk about this without going into hyperbole. It's that good, and just a great confluence of elements. And I think at the end of the day, the cool thing about it is that it's so elegant while also being just fucking metal. It's both things at once. It's so cool. And
I was actually thinking about this after I'd written the review and posted it, and there's almost nowhere to go but down. It's almost better to just for Jason Aaron just walk away from the character.
Well, that was my question, guys. I literally, like, for me, you know, with the whole, even TV's starting to do this, right, with 11 and 12 episode sort of runs, like, for me, like, why do you continue? You know what I mean? Do you just take a 6-month break and do something totally different? I mean, how do you do an issue number 12 for this kind of thing? I'd be very curious to have sat in the editor's room or however they plan these things, because this sort of I could see this defining the past 12 months, right?
Yeah, no, and, it totally has.
I mean, I just Thor returns to Midgard. It's like, oh, well, what did you do over your summer vacation, right? Like,
well, I am excited to see what comes next, because it's going to be a Malekith the Accursed story, and it's going to take place over the various realms, so not just Asgard and not just Earth, and so get more into that Thor lore, and we'll get to see Jason Aaron writing the Warriors 3, which he hasn't done yet.
Can they hook up with his granddaughters? That would be awesome. I love those characters. I would love to see this in one of those epic, massive trades, like a big version.
We were talking about that last night. A big hardcover where they
can only hope.
We hope.
Yeah.
So, in any other week, probably Batman 23 is the pick.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, it ran right up against Thor, which is, you know, one of the best comics in the last 10 years. But Zero Year Part 3. This is the issue where we inch ever closer to Batman becoming reality, and this one is where. In the last issue, it ended with the Red Hood gang blowing up Bruce's penthouse apartment in downtown. And so Bruce gets his ass handed to him by the Red Hood gang and then stumbles back home to the manor. Although I imagine that was a long way to stumble while he was.
That's a lot of stumbling. He did Uber in between, I think. There's some sort of car service.
Yeah.
He got on the Hyperloop. He got, you know, Gotham's got to have a Hyperloop.
In the middle of all that, there's a lot of flashbacks, and then finally he gets home to Alfred, patches him up, they patch up their relationship, and then we have the iconic scene reimagined where Bruce sits in the chair all bloody, staring at his father's bust and vows to become a bat. And I really loved this. What I really liked about the final scene, let's focus on that, because that's where the big part of this issue is, that hologram aside, whatever, what I found most striking about it was in the shot where he's staring at the bat on, or he's staring at the bust with the bat on it,
right?
He really kind of looks insane, which they really haven't played up so much before. You know, like he's got the cold, dead blue eyes when he says, "Yes, Father, I shall become a bat." And to me, it really felt like they're, you know, really acknowledging the fact that this is like sort of the point where he's broken.
He's at the bottom, and yeah. I love that. This is also told in parallel to his father rescuing him from the cave when he was a child and he fell
and
hurt himself and they had to get him patched up. And in both of those cases, he's just been, you know, demolished and gone through a really harrowing experience. And his dad comes in some form, you know, physically in the past and then in this sort of spectral way in the modern day. And, gives him direction on how to, you know, stand up after he's fallen down. That thing from, you know, Batman Begins that they repeat like 7,000 times in that movie. I love the device of the hologram projector kind of thing. I thought it was posed really sort of elegantly, and it's a futurist kind of idea. But it maps very well to this myth, mm-hmm. of the origins of the Batman. And I think it's a very complex idea to have this hologram projecting into that parlor, and it's mapping the cave onto the room. But I think it's told, like, it makes perfect sense. Like, it reads very well. Yeah. Like, I understood what was going on, even though that's a very complicated idea.
Well, I love the idea that it mapped the details of the room. Like, when he's looking at the window as the holographic bats fly through him, and the windows look like they're made out of cave, you know, stalactites.
Well, I think that's also him, like, to your point, Connor, where it looks like he's going into madness. I mean, this is what he's becoming, and he's defining the world around him. Mm-hmm. So even if the project, I could see, you know, the frame where he's standing in front of the open window with the bats coming in, I could see the hologram thing being turned off at that point, right?
Right.
Like, and it's his transformation that's really happening. My favorite scene was, not favorite, but like a scene that really stuck with me was when the Red Hood shot him through his parents, that painting,
mm-hmm.
With the here's the symmetry line. And it's sort of like, it was such a stark, horrible thing to do. Right. And that really, I could see him put in, and it surprised me. I never thought about that kind of thing happening. There's my parents, the ones I miss so much. And then he, you know, the bullet holes come from him, and now so starts his journey.
It's cruel. It's
very cruel, and I'm loving how that kind of really negative, really evil kind of thing is pushing Bruce in this direction. This is a very interesting way to go. I was walking from my coffee toward thinking about the show. I was wondering why now we're doing another Batman origin, like, and it does, I think inching forward is correct, Connor. But it, what's nice about this is it's letting the story breathe. We're not rushing to things. It's embracing the key moments, but adding lining and thoughtfulness around key moments that have never been told. So it's been a very interesting way of telling this. I'm curious to see where it's going to go, even though I know where it's going to go. And I do love Edward Nygma throughout this. Probably my favorite.
All those stitches really make me uncomfortable.
He should have been drawing Kick-Ass. I mean,
everywhere, and it really makes me cringe.
It's the stuffing inside the nose that really got me. That was like,
well, there's stitches coming off his lips and his fingers and his chin, and I'm just like, oh, stop.
You need to feel it. You need to feel it.
I very quickly need to praise FCO on colors.
Yep.
Because it's been mentioned on the website that it doesn't look like a Batman book. Like, this isn't the way it would normally be colored. I think that's a good thing. I think that it's different. Well, you know, just how vibrant that house fire is, and then going into these ethereal, dreamlike colors in the parlor. I thought it was just beautiful. And
this whole arc has been colored that way in a very sort of technicolor manner. We mentioned that for the last.
I think it makes sense though, because he has to become a being of the shadows. And the brighter the light gets, the more he gets driven into the shadows. So these flames are that bright on purpose. He's never going to be in rooms that bright again.
It's you got to have a point of contrast to what he becomes, and he gets darker as he goes, even beyond this origin story.
The entire palette, once he gets home, turns to blues and grays. Yeah. I mean,
you see that parallel. It's going back and forth between the fire and how he got out of the fire, and then walking to the manor. It's such a huge, like all the color gets sucked out in those scenes, and so going back and forth, I thought that was very effective.
Yeah, it happens in a turn of a page. The entire story changes color wise, and I think it's a very obvious and I think very classy way to say here comes the Batman, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. This issue did a lot of subtle things really well, which I really appreciated. Yeah. Saga 13 is finally back.
How long was this wait?
I think it was they just took a month off. Was it 2 months off?
It's like waiting for a girlfriend to call you back.
Well, they're back, and I think the last issue ended with they went to go see the writer, and there was the whole flash forward where they were already at the writer's house with the.
I love that.
But now,
yeah. Like, so it was like now. Inglorious Bastards, you know, yeah. Like,
yes,
they're
much hiding. So very much so.
And the little seal dude that something horrible is going to happen.
Which he mentioned in the letters column for this issue, saying that that was a Fiona Staples creation.
Oh, really?
And that he's going to, but he wants to use them more now.
I want an action figure for my desk of Seal Dude.
Anyway, this was good. I mean, I think that, you know, he has to lay a lot of track on a story like this. This is a long game story, and I thought people.
This is exposition.
People were complaining about, you know, nothing really happened. But the thing is, like, he's writing a novel here.
Yes.
And not every chapter of the novel is going to feature someone getting shot or blown up or, you know, something, some kind of major twist happening. Sometimes you have to just lay track. And this is one of those issues. And this is kind of what happened with Why the Last Man, that, you know, went on for 10 trades. So sometimes you're going to get exposition track laying done. And I'm fine with it. Although it does kind of push me towards reading it in trades, but that's a whole other
thing. Well, and we get some great character stuff with the Will and realizing we shouldn't be calling this character Slave Girl.
I love that.
We should give her a name.
Sophie the Slave Girl.
There's a little bit of meta commentary there, I guess. Maybe like the writer realizing we should probably give this girl a name instead of just calling her Slave Girl. And maybe that's something that came up in the letters or something. That what's her name? And maybe I should give her a name.
I think it's probably less that, more just the evolution of the Will.
Definitely.
We're seeing sort of him becoming more human.
I could see those things being parallel, like realizing I haven't had time because there's so many characters, you know, on the board that you have to move around, and like we should probably say what her name is. And wouldn't it be a good way also to give the Will this choice and give him some humanity?
I think also this is a really great sort of welcome trade readers kind of single issue.
Yeah, that was the point.
You know, definitely laying out like here's the characters that here's where they're at. It's one of those things where you're just happy to, oh good, I'm glad this book is back. I hope it comes back soon. I think it's setting everything up. You know, you have your sort of obligatory action sequence, but then I think Paul, you're right. It's all about having these wonderful, maybe Connor, you said it, but the character moments, getting to know the mom a little bit more, just people getting a little bit more fleshed out. The Will for my money is one of the coolest characters in comics around. So it's always nice to get inside his world a little bit more.
Oh, we got the bugs and the marrow and, you know, the pile of skulls and stuff. And so there's like a monster in this issue. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's the obligatory. It's good.
You know, they only had a couple of pages, but I really am intrigued by these reporters in the very beginning.
Yeah.
The paparazzi.
Yeah, the paparazzi with the camera with the eye on it and the guy, the yellow pants reporter. I really want to see how they're going to start messing things up.
It's that really lived in world and there's technology that you get a hint of it. It's almost an Easter egg in the visuals. Like,
yeah,
didn't draw attention to it. It's just, it shows that this world is very well thought out and realized.
I just still can't believe how good an artist she is, man.
Yeah.
God, some of these panels.
I don't know about you guys, but whenever I travel, and I do travel a lot, if I ever go to a place and I step out of the car or the train or the plane, whatever, and I just find myself in a field of skulls, generally speaking, I get back into the vehicle and I go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Because nothing good comes from that.
Nope.
I don't care where the skulls are there, if it was an old battlefield or what.
Bone bugs. That's fun.
Just
and I love the explanation. They reanimate marrow or some shit. Yeah.
Well, this is the guy who wrote Why the Last Man said, don't worry about why all the men died, because that's not the story. So
it just ignites your imagination. You get to have fun with it yourself.
Speaking of igniting imagination,
uh-oh,
let's talk about Infinity Number One.
Marvel's new event, written by Jonathan Hickman, drawn by various artists. In this issue, Jim Chung.
It's beautiful. This is a really stunning looking book, and I'd love all the designs for like sort of like Thanos's lieutenants. There's a lot of names to learn here, and we get a lot of like infographics and stuff from Hickman, which can be fun, can sometimes be a little bit overwhelming.
Can we take a step back and tell me why this is happening? Like, so I haven't been reading many ongoing like in the universe up to date Ultron type shit Marvel books. So I'm coming in going, okay, Infinity is like yet another Marvel event, because there hasn't been enough. And like, so what is this? Hey, everybody get excited because Thanos is back. Is that why this book
is so part of it? That's part of it. I think it's also to raise the status of the Inhumans again, because they're going to be doing a lot of stuff with them. And I think I thought this was daunting because there's a lot of mythology here and a lot of things that he's building. But I'm tantalized by a lot of this stuff, and I think I'm on board for this. I love the Marvel Cosmic Universe. I love Thanos. And I think these, like, this Corvus Glaive guy and the Outrider, they're all very interesting to me. I love that stuff. Hickman's Avengers are a little cold for me.
Yeah.
They're like the Ultimate Universe Avengers for me. Like
they're very, it's very serious, guys. Very, you know, kind of, it's sort of that Bendis thing where people say it's like all the same voice. But it's a different voice than that, obviously. But it's very straight laced. But I think he's really good for writing those bad guys. That stuff was great when they went to the other planet and when he introduced the Space Knights with all that pageantry and talking about how they're so self-sacrificing.
Where is Rom the Space Knight?
In a lawsuit.
In a lawsuit. Think they're going to introduce him at the end, like, and then Rose Rom, you know?
This was okay. And the first part I found really impenetrable, but that's because I had dropped off of all the Avengers books because they had been, I felt like they were really.
They're building a lot of this in New Avengers in particular. And well, the stuff with Ex-Nihilus, that's from Avengers. And then the stuff with the Illuminati, that's all in going on in New Avengers.
Yeah, I mean, the hard part for me was reading it and going, oh, yeah, this is all stuff I did not like in Avengers and therefore dropped. So, like.
Well, this reminded me of the Thor book. I mean, it's just like the same kind of, like, quest killing a bunch of people, or reminding me of Hitchhiker's Guide where the Earth needs to get destroyed. It just seems like, for me, it just seems, it seems very familiar in terms of aliens are angry and want to destroy Earth. And so, but there's different levels of anxiety about it. So the reason why more people we're just calling in the other alien races this time, as opposed to calling in other gods. Like what is?
I think the idea, and I could be wrong. So again, I haven't been following all the stuff. Is that the plot is Thanos is coming to Earth, but he's tricked the Avengers into leaving. So Earth is unprotected.
No.
Which we've seen before. Right?
Thanos hasn't tricked them. It's he's being opportunistic.
Right. Okay. Well, that's
These other aliens, the builders. It's sort of like the Prometheus aliens, who like built the architects.
He's seeing his opportunity to attack now that the Avengers are off planets. I think the idea is
right. And now everyone's divided,
taken off the table.
Yeah. A large group of the Avengers are going off planet to, you know, these builders are coming. Those sort of Nemoidian looking aliens we saw. They're coming, this cone shaped thing that they were talking about.
They're coming to build something on Earth.
They're coming to destroy the Earth because they've realized that Earth is problematic and is causing all of these cataclysms around the universe. And there's a lot of alternate reality stuff.
Not talking about the elephant in the room, which is Iron Man's costume.
Thank you so much.
It is a pretty ugly costume.
What
is that new? Is that a new thing?
That's like
Art Deco
Guardians of the Galaxy sort of redesign, outer space.
When did that happen? Thing.
Guardians of the Galaxy, and I haven't been reading Iron Man to be honest, but he has gone out into space.
He looks like a sculpture. He looks like he should be in a lobby of a movie theater. I just like, I don't understand the spacesuit at all. I mean, it's kind of badass. I'll give it to him. So he looks kind of like Nova, I guess, right? Is that Nova? And it's cool to see Captain Universe. I used to love Captain Universe as a kid back in the day. So it's fun to see that character.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I was really distracted by some of the character design, the suit and stuff. And I don't know. I really like Hickman a lot, but sometimes with these sub chapter headings and stuff, I mean, it's just like, guys, it's just a comic. I mean, my God, this—it just feels so important all the time.
Well, I like the gravity of it.
Importance would be mitigated. I mean, the important feeling would help if you have more of a connection to the characters, which is.
I think that's probably right.
Is that they feel very much out of the arm's length?
Yeah, I would say the Avenger side of it needs a little bit more levity.
Yeah.
A little bit more dimension. I mean, we had the sort of the raid on the Skrull house where they're
like
eating
that.
Pizza
that
and stuff. So that's a little bit of humor, but it needs a little bit more of that. I'm going to follow this, but I'm more interested in sort of what happens in the other books because there's going to be Thanos on Earth. Yeah. No, but I've been reading Marvel though. I've been enjoying a lot of the.
I'm just joking because it's, you know, they always say, oh, you can only just read the main book. Don't worry about the other books. But it'll be fun to see if those other books are as compelling.
Question is, Mike, are you going to continue reading this?
I don't know, man. I mean, I love the Inhumans. I love that miniseries that came out many, many years ago with the favorite artist of mine, whose name I can never remember. No, it was he's sort of got painterly style, but it's all very intense, and I'll remember. But I love the Inhumans, and if they're into it, I will continue to check it out. I just, you know, coming, I read this while I was reading the Thor book, and so, Thor was taking me to a place of interstellar epic awesomeness,
and it's funny too. I mean, it's a good balance in Thor, and this one it's a little bit more austere.
So there was just I guess I just wasn't in the right mindset for something that was so serious and self-absorbed. Mm-hmm. But if you're an old school Marvel person and you love Thanos and it's great to see the Space Knights, all that kind of stuff, this could be the book you've been waiting for. I just feel like I've just been away from the Avengers, whom I love, and the new Avengers, whom I love, all those characters, Hawkeye, all these people. It just seemed like, oh, I'm watching a movie with my favorite characters in them. I didn't feel a lot of personal connection with the characters. I just felt like I was watching the action. And that's the risk of getting out of comics for a while. You're just going to be sometimes a spectator in these kinds of events, so, which is fine. That's just the price of admission, I think.
Well, the good news for you is that Jerome Pena is going to draw one of the issues.
Well, that is very good news. Ian Frazier, that guy.
So Frazier, I would say
Frazier Irving. You got there eventually.
Quickly, I really like the Thanos stuff. I like the Outrider stuff and all the bad guys. I think that's great. And I think the Inhumans are the other really good part. I think it's got this real Game of Thrones kind of feel to it of royalty, and the Black Bolt stuff was great. So I'm on board.
So they're having marital problems, Black Bolt and Medusa? Is that the problem?
Well, they can't communicate.
No, they can write notes. Communication. So text message. Communication
is, I text you, my wife, Mike, all as time. You know, communication is key in the long-term health of a relationship.
Well, that stuff's going back to, like, the horse-faced one. That's going back to his Fantastic Four run.
You should just start telling Whitney that you can't talk anymore, because if you did, mountains would be.
Yeah, I have to write really tiny notes.
Let's do some business real quick. ifanboy.com/Amazon is a place you can go to help us. The best way you can do that by using all your shopping through that link. You can go through the Amazon link, go to regular Amazon. You make all your purchases. We get a piece of that. It doesn't come out of your pocket. It comes out of Amazon's pocket. And they've got really deep pockets because the CEO just bought a newspaper out of his own pocket. So clearly their pockets are
just
deep.
Just for yucks, you know.
So, you know, help us out. Do all your shopping there. Even better than that is just to make it your default link on your browser. If you've got a shortcut to Amazon, just copy and paste that link over, and you never have to worry about it again, which is what I do. And
that's what I do.
Really is the best way to help us out. And that's how you can go, hopefully, one day to buy the collection of Thor God Bomb, which we hope one day will be in a nice hardcover.
The placeholder ribbon. That's what I want.
I
want to make a sandwich called the God Bomb.
So please help us out by going to ifanboy.com/Amazon. Let's talk about Avengers Arena number 13.
To tell me why this book exists. So this is one of those books that I read where I was like, what's happening? Are kids really dying?
This is like the worst time to not read Marvel books. They're so good.
This has been one of the best books.
Marvel Now is great.
No way. Really?
It is. It's so good.
Tell me. I'm listening.
Because when you put these characters who have been off the table.
It's a locked room.
Not really. Yeah. It's like they're not being used anywhere. And so you put them in this life or death situation, which may or not be life or death. We don't know. We don't know exactly how that's going to work, and it is comics. It heightens the character because they're fighting for their lives. You get to see who they really are.
It's definitely less a story and more of a device then.
Well, it's a character piece.
No, so it's an interesting story. It's a cool setting.
These guys are all dropped in an island, and they're all have to survive, and it's about learning who they are, and they don't really want to kill each other. But they're
technically at the North Pole underground in a like a danger.
Right, but they think they're in this sort of island scenario. And this issue particularly, I wasn't really looking forward to it because it wasn't the regular creative team. It's Christos Gage and Carl Moline on art. And it was going to be exploring the outside world, where people thought these characters were, what was happening.
Oh, this was Christos Gage?
Yeah.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, and I didn't want to see that. I liked being in the locked room with these characters and didn't want to leave it. But I found it really compelling and interesting, and the machinations of how the people think they're still alive, and Hank Pym is sort of suspicious that they're all missing, and he's been investigating. And I actually kind of really liked it. I was not looking forward to it at all, and I found myself completely turned around by it by the end.
The writing felt different to me, and I was just thinking, like, it, I don't know, this is a weird thing for Hopeless, but okay, so now that makes sense.
I love the idea that they have these all their phones hooked up to an AI program that have been texting and tweeting for them, so people think they're alive because they're teenagers, and that's how else would you know a teenager is alive?
I'll be honest, I think I like the idea more than some of the execution because it goes on for a bit. Hank Pym's search. I was more interested.
I wouldn't want any more of this, really.
Yeah, I was more interested in like Molly from The Runaways being like, "Where are my friends? Like, I can't deal with this." And she's sort of the voice of reason, even though she's this little kid and this total firebrand. She's like, why does no one care that all of my friends are gone, and where are they? And
they're annoying.
It was great. It was fun to see her. I hadn't seen her in many, many years. She hasn't changed a day. I thought she would have grown up a little bit by now. It was fun to see that hat. It was a weird way to. I had never seen her look like that. It took me a couple seconds to remember who she was.
If you want to see Molly Hayes grown up, look forward to the Battle of the Atom storyline in the X-Men books because she's coming from the future as an adult.
Does she have the same hat?
It'd be awesome if she did.
She probably like keeps it in like a little pouch or something.
And around her neck.
Because it's time travel, so she's going to have pouches. So she probably keeps it around as like this artifact of her youth.
So this was an off-the-beaten-path issue for this series, but I think the series continues to be one of the
best. So totally the worst possible one for me to have read.
Then. Yeah. Okay. Well, not necessarily the worst. But
I would just say it's not a good example
of what
the
feeling of what
the series
is about.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
it's not
writer.
The normal writer and not the normal artist.
Yeah. Right.
So I will not take it personally.
I would say it's worth going back and checking this out because it's been such an interesting
Really quickly, Smallville season 11, number 16, the paper copy of the digital issues features. This is the debut of Wonder Woman in the Smallville universe.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And we have a show actually with three Smallville fans on it. So that's unusual.
I must have read the wrong one because the one that I read, I got it from the DC, the Comixology site, it was the fight with Batman. But
yeah, you had to read the numbers in the paper don't correspond to the numbers in the digital issues. They're much.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so this is a print version of digital stuff from a little while ago. It's not the most recent digital releases, right?
Yeah, so this would be Wonder Woman's debut, and it was really, really fun and made me sad that she never got to be on the show because it was really... Yeah, you know, sort of the pure Wonder Woman, which, you know, it's a different kind of Wonder Woman than you're getting in the book. But this was great. Great art, too, from Jorge Jimenez. So if you're into Wonder Woman, you might want to check out Smallville 16. Uncanny X-Men 10.
Uncanny X-Men 10. Uncanny X-Men 9, I feel like, just came out. Like, did it come out, like, last week or
probably,
like, a week before? So anyways, but that was with Bocciolo. This was with Fraser Irving. I wanted to point this out because... Jesus Christ, Scott Summers is a douchebag. He's so obnoxious. He's the reason that All New X-Men is more fun between the two. All New X-Men is fun every single time it comes out. It's had three great artists, I think. Mm-hmm. This one, I love Fraser Irving. I love Bocciolo, too. I didn't used to be a Bocciolo fan, but I really like his work on this book. And this would be fun because I love the New Mutant stuff. Like, and I love the... like triple agent Magneto, bald Magneto working for Maria Hill. And I love Fraser Irving's take on both of those. Makes bald Magneto look really creepy and Maria Hill look kind of interesting. And that they had a great sort of like John le Carre kind of meeting on a bench. It was kind of wonderful. And I love those kids and learning to be mutants and stuff. And I love the whole concept, but Scott Summers is such a dick. Like he's so annoying and... it makes this more challenging.
It's definitely harder because
it's good character work. I like that we have a hero who's just at odds, you know, and is being difficult, and making interesting decisions. It's not an easy character to like.
No. It is interesting that they turned him into Magneto, you know, like,
yeah,
he grew up to be the bad dad as opposed to the good dad, but. You're right. It's hard to be around him because he's a dick. So, it's interesting. It's not as much fun.
Just the bickering with Emma too is just it's very obnoxious. And I was just like, All New X-Men is so fun and so playful, and such a great idea that it's just so much more preferable than this. But I'm still reading this and still interested. And I appreciate that that Bendis is doing something that is asking a lot of readers.
East of West number 5 is the first issue I didn't read because I moved to trades after the last one.
Yeah, you know, it's probably a smart move. It's still a great book, and I'm still following it along, but I'm looking forward to going back and reading it all in one
this
shot.
Is very much like the Saga issue where, okay, you got the moment that you needed to have, and then they sort of explore it and sort of does a lot of character pieces and gives some context to the relationship that we've been sort of getting a hint of for the past 4 issues. I just love it, this book. It makes me think of Firefly, and it's got, you know, that wonderful, there's a wonderful otherworldliness to it, I think.
Yeah, it's a neat mixture of things, because it's not just like, what's that cartoon, Brave Star from the 80s, where it's just like cowboys and outer space stuff. Okay, wrong generation, sorry.
Well, the 80s would have been the right time for cartoons. I just can't think of what you're talking about.
Yeah, Brave Star.
It was along with like Silverhawks.
Silverhawks. Well, yeah, did he ride like a silver horse?
Yeah.
Robot horse?
One of the bad guys rode a weird silver horse. He had a regular, sort of half cyborg horse. I don't know. But he could also draw on the powers of like a cougar.
Sounding very familiar.
Just weird animal powers, like a bear or something. And there was a cartoon. There was a great toys and everything. Anyways. What the hell are we talking about? This was a neat mixture. So because it's Native American stuff and plus the Chinese element and then the future stuff, and it's sort of like this thing. I love the love story between Death and this just total killer. Like it was like that was the first day she killed 100 men, but probably not the last.
You never forget that day.
No, and so I love that love story and the sci-fi element with them having a kid who's now been taken into this place, huh?
He's now like Akira.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. He's like, it's very sort of like Akira or like Ghost in the Shell kind of visuals where like all these like tubes coming out of them. And they totally lifted the Star Trek 4 moment where Spock is taking the quiz and he's like going through all these like really tricky trigonometry problems and stuff.
Yeah.
And then at the end it says, how do you feel? And he's like,
all right.
So it's like the same exact moment in this thing with the child of Death and this assassin woman, and it's sort of like Joe Radowski writing Meet Joe Black, because this is love story with Death, and I kind of love that. Very poetic, I don't blame you for the
mix of genres, the sort of fantastical elements of personifying the concept of Death, and now he's all white as he was all black, and this is just a real tapestry of fun. Like, I just love reading it. It's one of the most escapist book that I've got, even though seemingly it's grounded in so many elements that are familiar. Mm-hmm. So it just for me, this is like a very pure kind of science fiction, and I'm really enjoying it.
So those are the books we wanted to talk about this week. You can go to fanboy.com/comics, make your pull list, rate and review your books, and choose your own pick of the week. We would like to run down the top 5 picks of the week chosen by the audience at the time of recording. Number 5, Batman 23 with 5% of the votes. Number 4, East of West. Number 5 with 7.9%. That's what I get. We're trying to read through the pop screen. Number 3, Saga 13 with 9.4%. Number 2, Infinity number 1 with 12.6%. And number 1...
The God Bomb.
Coming in like a angry God with two hammers. Thor, God of Thunder, number 11, 55.3%.
God, they just have such good taste. Look at those books.
That's
look
a great list. I was. List. That's a great list. I was thinking Infinity would take it away. Because it was exciting.
We're not that easy. We're not that swayed by Infinity number 1.
No, but you guys made the right choice. So let's take a look at some of the individual user reviews. History Guy reviewed Nightwing number 23, Story 4 out of 5. Art 4 out of 5, pick of the week percentage 0.3%. Nightwing in Chicago is one of the best things in all the Bat books. Nightwing has always worked when he's independent of the machinations of the larger Batverse, and here he's all on his own, figuring out his own problems in a city very different from Gotham. Higgins has made Chicago a great setting for Dick Grayson to have his own brand new adventures while also exploring all the elements that make him unique and familiar. Well, that was like when they moved him to, you know, Bloodhaven. But I think they're moving away from the idea of Bloodhaven. This is cool too. I like that he's even further, because where was Bloodhaven in?
It was like down Philadelphia to New York. Yeah, you know, it was kind of like an hour away. The best thing about this issue was that Will Conrad was on the art, and I'm not a big Brett Booth fan at all, so I was happy to see him not on the issue, and Will Conrad is pretty good, so I was happy with that. But Nightwing's a solid book. There's not really much to talk about with it, but it's fun. Let's read the next one.
The next one, we've got Kreyes 247, Justice League of America, number 7, story 4 out of 5, art a 4 out of 5. The pick of the week percentage at this point was 0.5%. He writes, or she writes, the curtains finally open up for the second act after a week of hiatus or so. For starters, the inking is actually more consistent than before, which is always a plus. The colors and line work feel so vibrant that you can actually really get a feel of the characters and what they're going through at certain spots. Cerez 247 feels for whoever follows them if they ever decide to walk away. I forgot to pick this up, but I've been enjoying what I've been reading of it so far. Would you guys?
I have two, but I would take issue with the idea about the inking. There were 5 inkers.
Wow.
1, 2, 3, and 4 colorists, but the inking was all over the place. I mean, you know, it was Doug Monkey, so it looked good. But
but he needs to have the right inker, or it's a nightmare.
Yeah. So some of it looked great. Some of it looked really heavy and dark. Some of it, I mean, just it was very obvious that there was lots of inkers in this book. And
how does that happen?
it's like, oh my God, we got it. When does that do?
Like, I get two, you know?
Inking party, inking party.
Get 5 inkers, 4 colorists, only 1 letterer. So Rob Lee holding together with the letters. But
the lettering was very
two writers, 1 penciler, 5 inkers, 4 colorists, 1 letterer, 1 comic.
It takes a village, really, to.
Thanks to DC Village. So many cover artists.
Doug Monkey, though, I didn't know he was on this. I wasn't having as much fun as you guys are with this, so I dropped this one. But is this all with the Trinity stuff?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not it's part 4 of 6, so there's 2 more issues. But it looked great when it was inked well.
Okay.
Go to fanboy.com/comics, rate and review your books, make your pull lists, and also write some user reviews. And if they're good, we'll get them on the show. And let's do a couple of audience emails while we still have time. We lost track of the clock, so we're running blind. Wes from Newport, Minnesota writes in and says, it seems like over the past few years, it's been tough for comic books to get the Walking Dead treatment. Some TV shows are optioned, but nothing ever comes of it. Chew, Thief of Thieves, a.k.a. Jessica Jones, Incredible Hulk, and Mockingbird. And some get pilots made but don't go beyond that. Wonder Woman, Lock and Key, Powers, Sixth Gun. The only success stories have been Walking Dead, Arrow, and hopefully the upcoming Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So what's the deal? I know this happens a lot in TV land. Is it just the nature of the beast, or is there some other reason why it's tough for comic books shows to see the light of day? Any thoughts? And there's a bonus question we'll get to in a minute.
Okay.
I think it's all about the money.
These are
expensive shows.
That's a factor, but the most important thing to realize is it's the nature of the beast. It's like how many things are optioned to get made into pilots? Very small percentage. Yeah. How many of those pilots get picked up? Very small percentage of that. I mean, it's just such easy works.
I was talking to a guy, he reads scripts, and he'll read 50 scripts in a month for movies, and one of those will be moved up to the next level, which is just another person reading it. Right. So it's very, very difficult. And with these existing IPs, I mean, the deals get very complicated. And also look at, you know, everybody's getting, there's a lot of movies, comic book movie sort of exhaustion happening right now. And I think people are just wondering, do we really want to commit to this? And, you know, I agree. I think a lot of these shows we would really enjoy them. But would a general audience like it? I think the odds of these things happening more often are actually higher now with the success of how Netflix is working. DirecTV is going to get into, you know, original content. So there are more venues for this kind of specialized content.
Then you get into budget problems.
It comes back down to the money issue. I think the performance of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. will be looked at rather closely to see how that comes up. But, you know, I think Under the Dome is still doing pretty well, and that's kind of got sort of the fantasy elements. My personal thought is that a lot of these things could be better done in 12-episode kind of miniseries formats.
Well, that's what, I mean, Walking Dead basically has.
Yeah, I mean, that's like an AMC or HBO kind of format. I mean, they do 12, 13-episode seasons and...
If
you're novelistic,
Hulk,
you know,
talking about a Hulk show, you're talking about a really expensive show to make every week.
Yeah, let's take a look at this list. I mean, you know, the Sixth Gun. I mean, that's a Western with occult elements. I mean, first off, that's a genre that's not really proven on TV lately.
Yeah, no one's gonna watch it.
And it sounds like it would be expensive. So that's a big risk to take. I mean, it's more expensive than some of the other things. But just as an update on some of these, I mean, like Lock and Key, they're talking about that's back to being a movie again, possibly. Yeah. Is that, I think, Kurtzman and Orsi's studio or label, whatever. And then Chew, I think they've been talking about doing an animated version of that. They were originally, it was a live action thing. And I think now it's possible that it's going to be an animated thing.
But you know, the success of Hannibal, people are getting used to the fighting into that.
It's relative. It's just tough. It's tough to get anything made in Hollywood in general, especially right now where they're not making anything because budgets are so tight, revenue streams are dried up.
Also,
it's tough to break through. So the more expensive your show is, the harder it is.
Just sort of as a, you know, it's.
But you're going to get Flash. They're going to do a Flash show.
I mean, just because it's a great story in comics also doesn't mean that it's going to translate to television.
Amen. That's right.
I mean, but then, you know, and then on the, you know, other side of the coin, great story could be a great story anywhere. Yeah. You don't know. Some stories, it doesn't matter the medium. You could successfully adapt it into two different medium, or two different media, but.
I'm happy kind of with what we've got right now.
Look at the bright side. There's going to be four shows. You're going to have The Walking Dead, Arrow, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is really kind of more of a movie spinoff than it. I mean, technically it is. It's superhero characters, but it's really about the movies. And The Flash, when The Flash happens, which seems like it's definitely going to. So that's four shows on, you know, TV. So that's a lot. So, yeah. I mean, that's something to be happy about.
And I don't necessarily think of it as like validation. I think it's dangerous to talk about it in those terms because it's just I would like for if it's a great story in comics and it could also be a great story on TV or in the movies, that's great. But I don't have to have everything like translated into a movie, a TV show, a video game, and a comic. Like it can be great in one.
You just want it to be a play,
but then it's also kind of cool that you know that more people could maybe find out about. Let's talk about this bonus question part of this email.
What comic book do you want to see made into a TV series? I'm still pulling for an HBO version of Gotham Central.
Keep pulling for it.
Well, that was in the rumor mill recently that they were looking at it. I don't know about HBO, but they might do that somewhere. And if S.H.I.E.L.D. does well.
Make it FX.
They could, because that's a very, it's, I mean, it's that would be the same thing. Kind of setup for a TV show. So I could see Warner being like, hey.
But I can imagine.
But that's the kind of thing that's more likely to get made because it's cheaper.
Yeah, that's just straight up drama. And every so often.
That's something that would.
That simple, the sky.
Seem like a no-brainer kind of thing.
It just makes you wonder why Powers isn't going forward in the present form. Well, maybe it's because there's too many superheroes. I have no idea, but the point is these things are expensive to make.
You don't know that it's the concept that is why Powers isn't going forward. It could be that the script is bad. The performances don't work.
Well, answer the question, though. What comic book series would you want to see?
Geez, what are you, a prosecutor?
I'm just wanting to get this thing done the right way.
I've got a day to do. What comic book would like to see made into a TV series?
Stumptown would work as a TV show.
Yes.
That's good. I was actually thinking of translating some of the Fatale or Criminal series. I would love Criminal, that type of crime book to be done. Actually, just fuck it. Legend of Luther Strode. Make that one.
I pick Infinity.
Oh, God.
As a TV show?
Yes. Yeah.
On Netflix.
On Netflix, yes.
It'd be like Claymation, awesome, you know?
Actually, Hawkeye would be great.
I really wanted to see Wonder Woman happen. I really did. But I think she was a good character for TV, but obviously it didn't work. So let's move on. Let's do another quick one. Stefan Z writes and says, quick and simple question. How do you sort your comics? By year, by publisher? Do you have a special box of your favorite comics? Do you sort them at all? Does your mother sort them for you? I don't know. this is a question we've answered a lot, but I figured since Mike is on, and I think since the last time we answered this, things might have changed since the digital's really come into.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
So how do you sort your comics?
I have two short boxes for my absolute never going to get rid of amazingness.
What kind of stuff's in there?
It's stuff like Paul Pope's 100%, just lots of little mini runs, 12 episodes. Yeah, I don't
know. And these are all single issues. These aren't, you don't have like.
These are all single issues. The original, the Darwin Cooks, the Golden Age one?
New Frontier.
Yeah, New Frontier. All those kinds of things. Those books that really just were amazing. Like, I've kept those and I'll never get rid of them. I've, you know, for better or for worse, I've gone to digital and trades. And so that has made sorting a lot easier. When I did sort my comics, which I would do once every couple of years and regretted every time I started it, because it meant I literally, my old apartment, Whitney was gone for like a long weekend, and my entire, every horizontal surface had a comic book stack on it. And I said, I will never do that again. I was doing it alphabetically by name. But the idea was always I would have these two short boxes and try to limit it to those short boxes of really wonderful
stuff to keep.
Stuff to keep, and then everything else is alphabetical. But you know what? I got to tell you, I'm getting older, and I don't want to throw my back out. So this is what I'm doing digital.
What if you did you get rid of stuff? How would?
Yeah, I gave away like a couple long boxes to the Boys Club, and I called them up and I just dropped them off in front of their door like an orphan, like a little baby,
swaddling clothes. Yeah,
yeah. So, and they were totally funny about it. They're like, I was like, could I just drop off some comics? And she's like, yeah, you know, if they're not dirty comics. I'm like, God, what, who are you? Dirty comic? But I guess, you know.
Mike quietly put away his heavy metal comics. Heavy metal.
Yeah, all my old heavy metal books. I have been getting rid of books, which it's very painful. But I've got two or three long boxes in my downstairs closet. And I'm actually thinking of getting rid of those without looking inside of them. Because clearly I haven't been interested in it.
Right.
But I know I'll go through it. But I have a lot of stuff. Like, I have all of these amazing Spider-Mans. I have all these old Marvel stuff that, like, I really cared about at one point. And now I'm like, God, I don't know. You guys have answered this question a lot. I don't know. What do you guys do? Connor, you've been slowly getting rid of stuff.
Well, there's two answers to this question for me. One is for new stuff, and that is I don't keep anything. I either give it away. I've been giving stuff away to a veterans group that then turns around and sells them for money to fund, you know, their programs.
Oh, yeah.
But I also have been giving stuff to my girlfriend's school, and I also have been, you know, just sort of, you know, just dumping stuff where I can the new comics. And then, because I read a lot of them digitally, and then I just, you know, if I like it, I'll get the trade, but I don't keep single issues.
Like when you're at the airport or the bus depot, a suspicious comic has been left.
It's kind of like the latest issue of Breaking Bad, the latest episode of Breaking Bad where I was just throwing comics out.
I'm gonna have to put in a note for that in the show notes, just in case anybody's not caught up on Breaking Bad.
My headphones off.
Jeez. But you didn't use any proper nouns, so that's okay. But you should be.
So the old stuff, I have, you know, like 35 or 40 long boxes, and you know, my they're going on eBay. They're going somewhere. I'm getting rid of that stuff. That stuff, I'm not keeping stuff anymore. We were talking about storage units before the show, which is strange. But that stuff's going somewhere. I'm going to keep maybe three or four boxes of stuff I really like probably a lot of the old Batman stuff. But the other stuff, I'm just dumping on the market.
It's like if you don't need them, give them away, because it's like
reading them. Yes.
I had the entire Civil War, all of them, boxed up with the little newspaper that showed the list. And there was this kid who was helping his uncle paint the house next door. And I just gave him that whole box. And you know what? Instead of saying thank you, he's like, how much do you think this is worth?
Stop.
I'm like, read the fucking comic, kid. You're going to be inspired.
It's never going to go away, is it? Like, that's the first thing that people ask is, what is this worth? My comics are in like complete and total disarray. I don't buy a lot of comics at the shop anymore. We talked about this, I think, last time, that because of this gig, we get sent some stuff, and I read a lot of stuff digitally otherwise. So I made a very rare trip to the comic shop to get Optic Nerve, and I hadn't been there in months, and I just like breezed on in and grabbed that. And I bought some other stuff just because.
That's what I have to do for Jupiter's Legacy. It's like, I was never here.
And so those is very rare. But otherwise, I'm pretty much in Connor's boat. I'm going to try to unload some of this stuff. And I'm looking for places that would appreciate it. I'm also going to be having some yard sales coming up. So I might see if anybody's into them then. But
I'm telling you, the Boys and Girls Clubs is a great place to go. They'll take them.
Cool.
And Goodwill, Goodwill will take them as well.
We sort them by handing them off to somebody else who will then sort them out.
Yeah.
I'll just try to pull out the recent Joe Casey stuff to, you know.
What is this sex comic? Uh-oh.
Yeah. Uh-oh.
So you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or call the voicemail line at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. Any questions or comments or concerns for the show? We're not going to air the concerns, obviously, but if you
No. We never get them. We wouldn't know what to do with them, so.
Paul, talk about your show. You haven't talked about it in a while. You've got it's back up and running.
Yeah, we just
speaking of Breaking Bad.
Recently, we're doing Breaking Bad. So like every Monday, basically, with Rebecca Shinsky from Book Riot and Food Riot and the Book Rageous podcast, which you should check out all of those websites and associated podcasts. We're just talking about the new episodes of Breaking Bad because we absolutely love it. And so we're going to do like sort of a discussion of each new episode, but then also, you know, if, you know, some prevalent theme comes up, we'll talk about that in terms of the whole series to date.
What's the name of your show?
Fuzzy Typewriter. Did I not mention that?
No.
Okay. Fuzzy Typewriter.
Where can people find it?
They can go to iTunes and search for Fuzzy Typewriter, or you can just type in fuzzytypewriter.com and it'll find the website.
For all your Breaking Bad needs.
For all your Breaking Bad needs. Although I do recommend the Breaking Bad Insider podcast with Vince Gilligan.
Well, he's a good get.
Yeah.
Episode 400 is next week. This is 399. So next week we're going to be doing an all-email show. We're going to talk about the pick of the week and then do the rest of it all email. Which is a great week for us because we don't have to read everything in time for the show. We
can 400 episodes.
400 weekly episodes, which is daunting when you think about it.
That's like, you do the math, that's like 8+ years.
Yeah. I really can't believe I've been on 400 of these things. It doesn't feel like it.
You have a couple more days to send in emails for the show. You can send them to contact@ifanboy.com, put 400 in the subject line, and we'll be posting the cutoff date. It's probably going to be Thursday. We're not sure when we're going to record it. Also, we're probably going to do it live streaming. We just haven't knocked down the time because Josh is away and we haven't been able to schedule it. So sometime Friday or Saturday, we will be recording it live on Google Chat and on YouTube like we've done before, or on that website we always embed the player so you can go watch it there. But also, you know, if you got an email waiting for the show, you've got a couple of days to get it in depending on when you're listening to this. This could be 2017 and you missed the deadline by many years.
Yeah, don't email us.
So check it out and come watch the show if you can. It'll be fun, and it'll be Paul's first live streaming marathon show.
I gotta
so
that's shave. Exciting.
Are you gonna shave? Gonna put a little makeup?
Don't have to shave. I haven't shaved in 3 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah. Well,
I might push it through the show. I might go, you know, have a super lumberjack beard for the show, which will be fun.
So I'm going to close this up, guys. Check out ifanboy.com for the pick of the week review and more in the comic book tales and articles and reviews and all the important stuff that's there. It's all very important, guys. And then if you want to learn more about these voices, go to ifanboy.com/about to see the staff and get all our social network list links. And then follow iFanboy on Twitter at twitter.com/iFanboy. And you can go on the Book of Faces, facebook.com/iFanboy as well.
And as I just said moments ago, email us at contact@ifanboy.com. Leave a voicemail line at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. That was less weird when we used to, you know, have things between the two things. Yeah. But now that we don't, it's like I just said it. 30 seconds. So if you don't know the email address, you've heard it twice in the space of a minute and a half.
And if you dig us, you can write us a review in iTunes, or better yet, tell your friends about us. Introduce your mom to podcasts. Spread the iFanboy word.
Which is what?
Balls.
That is the iFanboy word. iFanboy word is balls. So that's it for this week's show. Mike, thanks for coming.
That's a pleasure, guys.
Filling in for Josh while he's in the burn ward, undoubtedly for his sunburns.
Covered with gel.
He'll be back next week.
It's the Ray-Ban Vampires commercial. He just burst into flames.
He'll be in one of those iron lungs. They'll just sort of squirt lots of aloe into it. He'll
like Bullseye in Daredevil.
Exactly. So that'll be a fun show. So until next week, we'll be seeing you live. I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Mike.
Bye.